From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. In his first State of the State speech, Governor Nathan Deal said criminal justice reform would be at the top of his to-do list. As Deal prepares to leave office 8 years later, Georgia's prison population is 12% smaller than previously projected. The incarceration rate for black men is down 30%, and the number committed to the Department of Juvenile Justice has dropped 46%. For those who have served time, staying out of the system is an uphill climb, which is where Gangsters to Growers digs in. The Atlanta organization helps young people who've been incarcerated get back on track through farming. Founder Abiodun Henderson joins me now in the studio. Abiodun, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for being here. Also with me, two trainees from the program, Dariante Trent and Raven Cantrell. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Now, I realize that this just gets you out of farm duties for today. Is that part of why you're here?
You actually don't. So we actually got to go to the farm today. And it's kind of cold, but Miss Abby is like, oh, we're still going to go on the farm. We're just going to do some other work, you know?
Well, you got him here. Thanks so much, Abiodun. But statistically, 50% of young people who've been incarcerated are back in the system within 3 years. So what are some of the particular challenges for a young person leaving detention or keeping them out in the first place?
The number one cause of mass incarceration is poverty. So when we look at the crimes that are being committed or allegedly being committed by young people, they tend to revolve around selling drugs, mostly marijuana, and, robberies. So that tells us right there that obviously, these young people need economic opportunities. Then there's some mental illness situations. There's, homelessness is another factor. We have young people in our program that have been homeless, and their housing isn't secure. And then we have the environment in our communities that are affected by poverty. So it's highly stressful situations in our neighborhood. So everyone's highly stressed. And then so you see a lot of fighting happening, aggravated assaults, all those things. So that tells us that there's folks that need therapy, right?
Right.
So, I think those are the things that, keep the revolving door going within the criminal justice system.
So I focus on farming as part of the solution against the high rate of incarceration and reincarceration.
Yeah, well, farming is just one of the things that we do, right? We focus on that because not only is it meditative, it's also giving people the skills to be self-sufficient. And then we're supporting farmers that don't have labor. So if they don't have labor, then we're not growing the maximum amount of food that we can grow in order to be able to feed our schools, the young people in our schools and our community. So farming is just one of the many solutions.
Well, there's a lot of data behind you to support the idea that poverty is a huge contributor to incarceration rate in our country. But I'm wondering for you, Dariante, for example, what was it for you that pulled you away from, well, let's say the straight and narrow path?
Just seeing stuff in my everyday environment. I grew up in around the gang-infested activity, around people that was used to robbing and killing. So quite naturally, I adapted a few habits that weren't ideal.
How did you end up in prison? Or in juvenile prison?
Well, I had caught a few felony charges at 15 that carried me over until I was 17, and they was able to charge me as an adult. So they sentenced me to 2 years in prison at 17.
How about for you, Raven? What happened for you?
I've actually seen myself going to jail too much, and I was resigning and raised in Clayton County, Georgia. So once you're in there, it seemed like you just can't get out. It's like they just come back after you again and again and again. And it's like that's not the everyday life that you would like to see.
How old are you now?
I just turned 21 on the 30th of December.
Mm-hmm. So prison, of course, is supposed to be a deterrent. Was it for you?
I never went to prison.
You didn't?
I just went to county jail. Mm-hmm. And again, overall jail system is not.
What kind of charges were you in for?
My first was theft by taking, which is now labeled as Grand Theft Auto. Mm-hmm. I took my mother's car and she pressed charges on me. Then I had a failure to appear in court for that charge. Then I had possession less than an ounce and did time served for that. And I ended up going to jail with this female for shoplifting.
Mm-hmm.
And now everything is clear, but now I have another charge just because it was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
And my charge is now intent to distribute, possession of marijuana, intent to distribute.
Did you get any kind of job training or counseling on how to get life back together after serving time?
I did not, because I just be to myself most of the time. So when it's like when I ask for help or cry out for help, I really don't do it. I just go and find it and see where life takes me, and I run into the right people. Prime example, here's Miss Abby, and now I'm into Gangsters to Growers, making my life better, making better decisions, choosing the right path, and yet again, I feel like that hope that I've been looking for, I actually got it.
How did you find her?
I've actually known a member in this group before, and he was like, you know, because I had to do community service. So he was like, you could talk to Miss Abby. Miss Abby can help you with the community service. You can work with us on the farm. And I'm just like, okay, well, let me see. And I gave her a call. She was like, well, see me tomorrow and we can work something out. And ever since then, I've just been ongoing.
How about for you, Dariante? Did you get any kind of training or counseling on how to get your life back together after being in jail?
Not at all. They put me back in the streets in my original neighborhood around the same people that I had been around my whole life and told me to find a way to get out.
Mm. How did you come in contact with Gangsters to Growers?
Actually, a friend I went to school with over the summer, he found out about the program when it was first starting, and he had told me that it would be an opportunity that I couldn't pass, and I guarantee you it's an opportunity that I wouldn't expect to be in the past, but right now I wouldn't see myself without it.
Mm. That's Dariante Trent, also with us Raven Cantrell. They're both trainees in the Gangsters to Growers program, founded by Abiodun Henderson, who is also with us. Abiodun, you moved to Georgia in the mid-2000s. So what was it that drew you here?
Well, me, myself, as a young person, at their age, they both just turned 21 in the last few days. When I was 21, I found myself in an abusive relationship and in New Orleans. And my friend's mother just... When we came to visit Atlanta, she showed me different opportunities, and I stayed here. I never went back to New Orleans.
And you were in the restaurant business here,
and
too,
I was
right?
in the restaurant business in New Orleans and here. And, you know, I was doing that for about 14 years in fine dining, making good money, enjoying life, able to purchase a house at the age of 26 in the West End neighborhood, Westview neighborhood, you know, living life.
So how did you become involved in urban farming and the local food movement?
Well, after losing my house in 2011,
It was foreclosed on?
It was foreclosed on. Yeah. I even received a check 2 years later saying they illegally foreclosed on me. By then, I was a full-blown activist, and that wasn't one of my priorities. But, right when I was foreclosed on, my father also passed away around the same time. And the Occupy movement started about 9 days later after my father passed away on September 1st. And my mother, being of African descent from Liberia, West Africa, the Kru tribe, which we were known to be the hardest to enslave, KRU, Kru tribe, represent. And my father was a rank-and-file Black Panther member. So it's always been in me to fight for what's right. And I got the opportunity once the Occupy movement came around and met the founder of Occupy the Hood, Malik Rahsaan.
So what were the first steps in setting up an actual urban farm?
Well, the first one that I started was on my block. We went to City Hall, found out who owned the property. We contacted him. He said that we could use the land. And we began planting and teaching babies in the neighborhood. And after that, after getting training from True Living Well, one of the premier urban farms here in Atlanta, that happens to be a Black Ran, I took over the community garden in that same community, like three blocks away from where I was living, the Westview Community Garden. And it was great getting resources from the Atlanta Community Food Bank and their garden division, getting volunteers, really interacting with all the children in the neighborhood and making sure they knew how to grow food, giving out rain barrels. It was really fun and exciting.
But at the same time that you started working with kids and teens, your neighborhood, Westview, began intensively gentrifying. How did that affect your work with the community?
So about six of the families that used to come to the garden were displaced. These were folks that were on Section 8 housing that were used by homeowners to hold down their properties until they saw the neighborhood changing or the housing prices rise. So folks that had been in the neighborhood for 10, 15 years were now being told to move within 2 to 3 months. And I just saw that happening again and again. And I literally saw a family of six children that used to walk across the street to come to the garden. You know, their grandmother called me in a panic saying, they're telling us to move. They're telling us to move. And I just watched that happen over and over again. I would go to the neighborhood organization since I was a part of the executive board as the person that ran the community garden and would say, hey, you know, I hope we're not displacing people, you know, as the housing prices rise, you know, I hope that's not. And I was told repeatedly, oh, we want to form a nonprofit to keep the elders in their house. We want to do this, we want to do that. And then I would watch them do the opposite. You know, it was the organization was filled with real estate agents and people that were interested in the American dream, right? So at the same time, it's hard to really blame them, you know, because they're just spokes in the wheels of this system. But at the same time, when being told the truth, you know, by people in the community, like, this isn't what we want to see, they still continued with the same, you know, promoting, marketing the neighborhood as up and coming. And now the houses, my house was $88,000 when I bought it in 2008. And now the houses are going for $200,000 to $400,000 in that neighborhood.
So tremendous pressure on the real estate in those communities. So how do you recruit young people to this program?
Well, being active for the last 6 years on the West Side, I've met a lot of young people, and I really just go canvass the neighborhoods. You know, as a grassroots organizer, that's what we know to do, is to go around the neighborhood and say, hey, do you know anyone that has been formerly incarcerated that's looking for work? We're going to be working in this farm right behind me or around this corner. You know, and then that's how I met our first two trainees, Erica and Quan, which Erica's in the lobby right now. And then, like these young people said, now the young people are recruiting their friends. So people ask all the time, do you have a connection with the DOJ, the Department of Justice? Do you have a connection with the juvenile justice system? And I tell them, really, I let the trainees recruit their friends. And that way we're actually changing an ecosystem.
Well, it sounds like it is working. I'm speaking with Abiodun Henderson. She's founder of the urban farming group Gangsters to Growers. Dariante Trent is also with us, and Raven Cantrell. They're trainees in the program. We're going to hear more about their story when we come back. This is On Second Thought. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott, and I'm talking with Abiodun Henderson, who founded Gangsters to Growers. That's a program that pulls on several different threads in American culture right now: urban farming, gentrification, incarceration. The program trains young people who were previously incarcerated in farming and also in entrepreneurship. Trainees Dariante Trent and Raven Cantrell are also with us. Dariante, Raven, who wants to walk me through a typical day on the farm? What are you doing from 8 to 5?
Typical day on the farm, depending on which one we at. So a typical day at True Living Well might be in the wintertime doing compost. So that's breaking open bags, but making sure to discard any trash. So, because trash don't break down, so the whole point of compost is to have material that breaks down within itself to make the soil healthier within the beds when you decide to plant. So we have like orange peels, banana peels, you know, lettuce, collards, apples, you know, a few things that that break down and
decompose.
Yeah, decompose pretty much. So we
So what time do you get there in the morning?
About 9:30, 10, somewhere around up and through that, till 1 o'clock.
Till one, yeah.
So right in the morning, do you start right on the farm, or you guys do something else as a group activity?
So from 8:30 to at least 9 to 9:30, we do yoga.
Really?
Yeah.
So is that the first time you've done yoga?
Yeah. So joining the program was my first time ever scratching my body the way I did.
Do you work on, you said something about being on one farm. Do you work on the same farm every day or different farms?
No, we work on a few black-owned farms around the Atlanta area.
So, Raven, what kept you with it?
What kept me with going to the farm?
Yeah, like, why did you stay with this program?
It is unique. It's very different. I never, first of all, this is a job, and we come to work to do yoga, therapy, management classes. We go to the garden to make compost and learn how to garden, even though that's like pretty fun until it gets cold. And then you have these events that we are invited to. Like we've went to the village market quite a few times. Then we've been to the Buckhead banquet at the Marriott Hotel.
It was the Grand Hyatt. Yeah.
The Grand Hyatt. Oh my gosh, that was so beautiful.
By the Kellogg Foundation. And we went to the village market to sell hot sauce.
Yes.
Hot sauce. Tell me about the hot sauce story, because that is a product that you produce.
So we through, you know, working in fine dining, and then, well, actually Beyonce. We got a credit. It comes down to Beyonce. When she said hot sauce in my bag, swag, I said, oh, we're part of SWAG, Southwest Atlanta Growers Cooperative, which is a black urban farm cooperative here in Atlanta. And she said, hot sauce? Yeah, we were thinking about some type of sauce, and hot sauce is going to be it. So we infuse our hot sauce with turmeric, lavender. It has alkaline water, apple cider vinegar, pink Himalayan salt, the finest products. And we've been featured in Bon Appetit magazine. We're at Farm Burger, the Pullman, Fresh Harvest, a couple of different places carry our hot sauce.
What's the name of the hot sauce so people can look out for it?
Sweet Soul.
Yes. Sweet Soul. You guys sound like you're ready for the commercial all together now. Well, Abiodun, this began, as any other project does, with a vision. And how have you been able to sustain operations and funding and community buy-in? Because you have to pay people.
Yes, I'm used to doing programs without real budgets. So I did a camp in Westview Community for 3 years in a row. The last year is when we had some funding from the Community Foundation, about $5,000, $4,000. So, you know, I knew it really takes people power to pull anything off. But thanks to one of our board members, Tammy Boyd, who's out of the Food Oasis organization, she had a meeting with Workforce, the Workforce Development Program here in the City of Atlanta, now called WorkSource, and told them about the program. We met with them, and they said, yes, we're willing to provide the $15 an hour for your trainees as their stipend. And once we had that secure, even though I don't have a salary, we don't have any staff that have salaries, I knew if we pushed forward, things would come. So far, we've had about $25,000 that has come through in increments that has helped sustain us. We sell hot sauce to help sustain us. But, you know, we're running a $300,000 a year program institution. So we're making it do what it do. But we are also working with our partnerships with True Living Well, and just trying to find the money to sustain this and really build the business and the worker-owned cooperative, which is one of our main goals, that will really sustain this so we don't ever have to ask anyone for money.
You mentioned that you get a lot of lip service, projects like this get a lot of lip service in communities that are gentrifying. Oh, yes, we would like to make sure that elders can stay here or people who have affordable housing. What has been the response in those communities to fields of collards and kale and people coming in to grow every day?
Well, everyone's excited to see the youth. Everyone's excited to educate the youth. Everyone loves community gardens. But if we're honest about a few things, speaking on the gardens, you know, gardens, community gardens are a tool of gentrification, which is sad, right? That would be something that raises the property values and displaces people that need access to the fresh food, which a lot of things that we experience here in this country and city are a lot of contradictions to just humanity. So, yeah, everyone is excited, but it's also used to raise property values at the same time.
So you become part of the problem
We become part of the problem. And I didn't realize it when I used to see the garden on the website that was created by some of the colonizers, gentrifiers, displacers, or just American citizens looking for the American dream. You know, when I saw it on the website, I'm like, yay, you know, they're promoting it and it's going to bring more people to volunteer. It's going to be all the things. But no, it was like, look at all this great work that we're doing in this community. Look at this camp that we have. Look at, we're inclusive. Don't you want to be part of an inclusive community, you know, type of thing. And it was used to really fast forward the gentrification process. And one thing I really have to mention, when we're talking about the criminal justice system, we're talking about the youth, we need to admit the fact that there have been studies that say that young people's brains aren't fully formed until they turn 25. So how are we jailing? How, when we go to the court system, it's nothing but young people under the age of 25 that are being, you know, treated as adults with a fully functioning brain that have been raised in the right situation and should know exact right from wrong, you know, instead of going with their survival instincts of I need food in my stomach, I'm going to get it how I can. How are we complicit, all of us, me, you, young people, how are we complicit in a system that knows that the young people's brains aren't even fully formed to make decisions in the right way, and we decide to fund our city through these arrests? It's just completely wrong.
Dariante, I'm wondering for you, you know, I'm not guessing that you're going to become a farmer, or are you thinking that that's something you'll do? What where do you want to go from here in this program?
So my main goal right now is to use the program to not only help me get better, but to help my community get better too, you know, change the people around me. So right now I'm trying to actually invite a lot of my friends to join the program before it becomes to a point where, you know, we got an actual waiting list for the program because people signing up quickly.
Mentioned that you're taking you learned some management skills. Do you imagine yourselves going on to do something else, maybe managing projects after learning what you've learned here?
Probably in the future. Well, I actually see myself doing something like what you do, you know, broadcasting. I actually want to I want to use my voice for something more, you know.
You got a nice, warm voice.
Thank you.
You can keep working on that. But how about for you, Raven? You said, you know, you kept getting caught in the system, that it kept coming back for you. What has this program taught you about your own role in that and how you want to live your life?
Okay. When we would sit down and talk to each other into, like, group therapy or whatever, I would really sit and open up and really open my mind to what is it that I really want to do. And when I really joined this program and realized that there is so many opportunities that I can get warmed up to and actually work for and get so much money for it, I would love to. I just love this program so much because Miss Abby even mentioned me to this Text for Girl program, and that helped me up even a lot to let me even think about being a data scientist or an analysis. To just be like, that's probably part of one of the careers that I might pursue myself to be. And with this program, I actually want to stay in it and stick my foot into it and just see how far we could go to be like a CEO of it, or hopefully it gets that big and, you know, help Miss Abby run it. And, you know, really just get a lot of kids to open their eyes and let them know, like, there's bigger and better out there besides what they got to offer you. So,
well, and thinking that you're talking about that, did you ever, when you were growing up, see yourself as running an organization? I mean, what did you imagine for your future?
I always said I wanted to speak for girls because I'm a young girl, and I've been by myself for so long. I have a brother, but we haven't grown up together. So I was the only child. I lost my father. I lost my grandfather. My mom is a single mother. She's very hardworking. All she knows how to do is work. And it's like, what is it that I want to do? Because my mom wants me to do better. That's all I was told. My granddad wants me to do better. My dad wants me to do better. So it's like, what is it that I want to do that is better for me? Because, again, I've made a lot of mistakes. I can admit my wrong, but I know how to turn around and say, hey, I don't want to do that no more. I want to be better. I want to be that. I want to be somebody.
So, Abia Dunn, looking at this program, what do you envision for the future?
The future is a 1,000 worker strong, worker owned cooperative. I belong to a church in the West End that where we own, we're one of the largest black farm owners. We own 4,000 acres in South Carolina where it's legal to grow hemp. And as a people, as black folks, I realize a lot of us realize we don't produce anything, we don't manufacture anything. So, why can't we make toilet tissue, paper towels, clothes, fuel, hemp milk, anything that you can make out of hemp? Why don't we manufacture it for the world, for the city, for the country? So that's what I see. And that's what Raven is mentioning. You know, what I see is owning a building, you know, where it's really almost like a school, you know, where we have groups of 20 going in and out of all different classes, going to different five different farms each day. You know, we have a group of 20 at different farms. And then, you know, in the afternoon, everyone's going into all the different classes, which are, you know, group therapy, financial literacy. We have business classes at Clark Atlanta, economic organizing classes, which teaches about worker cooperative development, nutritional cooking, environmental responsibility, where they're learning how to be zero wasters, writing classes, boxing classes. We have so many people that are waiting to pour into the young people. So, yeah, the future is looking great for Atlanta.
Abia Dunn Henderson, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
She's founder of Gangsters to Growers, and also Dariante Trent, Raven Cantrell, trainees in the program. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for having us.